ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, wrestling fans worldwide, to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of one of the largest and oldest wrestling families on the planet.
The Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The Stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the Stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the Stud is here.
Please welcome the creator of the popular 605 podcast and the president of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network, your co-host, the great Ryan Last.
Hello again, friends, and welcome back to another edition of Ron Fuller's Studcast. I am the great Ryan Last, and it's my pleasure to be with you once again as the Tennessee Stud's about to take us down that road of wrestling history, revealing history that is previously unknown, sharing stories that have been forgotten by time, and here they are once again. And of course, without any further ado, let's introduce him right now. The man of the hour, the man who rides lightning each and every week, the host of the Studcast, the legendary Tennessee Stud himself, Ron Fuller. Ron, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Ryan. Pleasure to be here. Always a pleasure to be here. And today, I'm kind of excited about this one today. This one really rocked my world in a way. Took me way back. And and I think a lot of fans are going to hear names they've never heard before today, and names that are really historical in the sport. And I guess that's what we're all about here, Brian. I guess we have become one of the historical podcast, best wrestling historical podcast out there, and this one is really full of history.
You know, there are stories that we've told, stories that we've expanded upon, stories that we revealed, different details about that have never been revealed before, whether it was the Knoxville War, the Georgia War, various things throughout your career, some of the big moments throughout wrestling history. But today we're actually going to focus on a couple of things that aren't widely known, aren't widely talked about. Of course, we've talked about your territories being the lost territory. And here's a great example of it. This is 1975, and there's a lot of really cool things happening in Southeastern. And for a lot of people, we don't know this history. And you're about to tell us some cool stories today, Ron.
Well, I'm going to certainly do my best. And you mentioned old Lightning. He's saddled up and ready to ride. And I'm just chomping at the bit as bad as he is, man, to get to rolling on it.
No need to chomp on that bit any further, Ron. Where are we going to start off this week?
Well, we're going to start off this studcast with the impact I'm making during this time frame in the sport in Tennessee and Kentucky. We're going to discuss the March 7th, 1975 Knoxville card and the results from all the matches that night. We're going to with a special focus that night on the 10-round boxing match between myself and Ron Wright. We're also going to look at the next Knoxville show following the boxing night. And then we're going to add two more matches to the upcoming second Coliseum card of March 23rd on a Sunday afternoon. First time that's ever been done in Knoxville. We'll talk a little bit about a unique angle that's going to unfold on the television program after the boxing match. And a controversy that's brewing behind the show. Underneath everything, there's a controversy going on between myself and the commentator for my program, Big Jim Hess. And maybe finish, even if we have the time, with a rare look at an unknown wrestler in a main event that draws a sellout that nobody even knows who he is. So It's going to be a pretty unusual day today, I would say.
Well, there's a lot there. You just dropped a lot on us that you're going to talk about in the next hour. Where are we going to start, Ron?
Well, let's start right with my impact that I'm having since I've gone there out of Florida and bought the Knoxville and started the Southeastern Wrestling. I'm having an impact not just in Knoxville, but I'm having an impact on the other side of the state as well. So by March 7th, 1975, we're in that time frame right here of March 7th, early March 1975. I've been wrestling in the state of Tennessee and occasionally in Kentucky since the 18th of October, 1974. That's only 20 short weeks since I left Florida. In just 11 weeks, I won the prestigious Southern Heavyweight Championship in a one-night tournament in Memphis on December 29th, 1974. And after winning that title, I defended 14 times in the first 9 weeks of 1975. I only lose once to Ron Wright in Knoxville, and I win it back the very next week. I'm kind of rapidly really making a name for myself on both sides of the state of Tennessee, with 16 matches on the eastern side of the state and 9 in Memphis on the west side. I also appeared in Chattanooga and Kingsport a total of 9 times since my arrival from Florida. I was kind of an instant star in Louisville, Kentucky, because the television program from Memphis went into Louisville. And I've wrestled already 5 times in 1975 in Louisville, successfully defended my Southern Heavyweight Championship 4 times, and wrestled Jack Briscoe for the World Championship 1 time. So I think it's a great indicator of how fast I'm getting over. And another great indicator is the increase in attendance everywhere I'm going. Jerry Jarrett, who's booking me in Memphis, tells me that he has never seen anyone get over that fast, considering that I'd never wrestled as a heel until my first match in Tennessee in October 18th of 1974. My own Southeastern Wrestling Company is now starting to get off the ground a little bit. We're riding a 5-week run of capacity houses in that smaller building in Chilhowie Park. After our first show, that's just since the first show in the Coliseum of January 24th. So I'm kind of getting it done in a way where I did not think I would have these kind of results. I'm finding that maybe I'm a little better in the ring than I thought I was, maybe a little better behind the microphone than I thought I was. And I'm beginning, like I say, to really make an impact in the state of Tennessee and in the state of Kentucky.
Well, Ron, at the top of the show, you mentioned the boxing match with you and Ron Wright in Knoxville. Can we go over that card? And that was, I believe, March 7th, 1975.
Yes. Okay. Opening match for that card. And here's a name right off the bat some people will know, some people won't. And I think a lot of them be surprised about who this really is. His opening match was a guy named Percy Pringle versus Johnny Gray. And this match, like I just said, featured a guy who will become one of the most famous managers of all time. Now, I don't know how many fans out there recognize that name, Percy Pringle, but he will end his career as the infamous Paul Bearer, manager of WWE's Undertaker. He's working this match with one of what I call the young guns from Australia, Johnny Gray. It's not the greatest first match that I'd ever seen, but it certainly wasn't the worst. I watched some of the match because I wanted to see mostly Johnny Gray and how he had improved since the days of early 73 when I had spent 3 months in Australia. And he was much improved, but I also thought that Percy Pringle was not that bad, considering he was very young, pretty young guy at this time. And he's doing a pretty darn good job in the ring as well. That's crazy to have a guy go from being a Percy Pringle to Paul Bearer in the WWE. Pretty fascinating for me.
I know he's from the Gulf Coast area, and that's how he broke in. He was a fan down there. Do you remember how he got booked for you in Knoxville?
I think that he came from Jared. I believe Jared was using a lot of different guys at that point. And he was kind of working with me, and we were exchanging a little bit of talent. Dale Lewis is going over there working Memphis. He and Jarrett and a few other guys from his side of the state is working for me some in Knoxville. And I believe he turns me on to Percy Pringle. Percy, I don't think, becomes the greatest wrestler, but he certainly becomes a force in the business when he finally makes it as far as the WWE. Second match on that card is Professor Dale Lewis versus Charlie Fulton. Obviously, Lewis is way too much for Fulton. But the great thing about this particular match with Fulton is he takes care of Fulton so quickly, it leaves a lot in his tank. And that night, he takes on four challengers from the audience, Dale Lewis, and these were $1,000 challenge matches in which these are shoots. He's proving to wrestling fans in Knoxville and around that part of the country that wrestlers are legit, and they're not going to be beaten by people from the crowd under any circumstances, and certainly not Dale Lewis. I watched all four of these shoots because they were, for me, important, simply because they were shoots, for one thing. And it would have been disaster if somebody had been able to beat Lewis, but I really didn't think that was going to happen. And they meant so much to me in the development of the appreciation of the fans in that part of the country for wrestling. I wanted to get away from that blood and guts mentality there, and I wanted to start building wrestling there. So Danny Hodge stood next to me during this match, these shoots, and I wondered what he was thinking, since I'd heard for the last several weeks these little conversations between Hodge and Lewis about these shoots, you know, and how Danny was not handling them the way that Hodge liked. It will be a few more weeks, but in a few more weeks, I'm going to know what Danny's thinking, because it's going to become really, really obvious.
Well, speaking of exposing those fans to great wrestling, and speaking of Danny Hodge, I'm looking at the results here, Ron. You have a great wrestling match with Danny Hodge coming up next.
Yeah, he's on that card, obviously, and he's watching every one of these shoots. And if you're time, he seems to be on a lot of these early cards for me. I like using him, just like I like having Dale in that on those cards, because he's a wrestler and because he's so legitimate. Nobody can argue with that fact, not even the newspapers or anybody else. He's got that phenomenal amateur background and Olympic teams. So, you know, wrestling's a name on the marquee, and in that night, that match that night against Les Thatcher, that's what the fans get. They get a real dose of great, great wrestling. I felt like that booking that one had done a whole lot for the town and for Southeastern wrestling. It's just having those type of guys, Hodge and Lewis, on cards is you cannot. You cannot draw just how important it is for fans there to be getting that big taste for wrestling. The fourth match on that card is a return tag team championship match between the champions, Dutch Mantel and John Foley, and Jimmy Golden and Rocky Smith, who had lost by disqualification the week prior. And it ended again in disqualification this particular match. And Rocky Smith, the club-footed Inferno, did a great sell job. I watched the tail end of this match and gave Jimmy a tremendous hot tag, which is so important in a great tag match. And Jimmy really exploded the crowd, man. He came in, he made a little bit of a comeback, and then he hit both those guys with beautiful drop kicks. Jimmy always had great drop kick. And it's his second week now in Southeastern Wrestling. And I get such a great feeling about what Jimmy Golden is going to do for my company in the future. And he's certainly not going to disappoint me. The main event is obviously a 10-round boxing match with me and my second, who is Danny Hodge, against Ron Wright and his second, Don Wright, his brother. And to make the match a more official boxing match, I even had them bring the metal buckets down with the water in it. They had the towels to wipe us down between rounds. Really wanted to do it up right and to have as good a boxing match as we possibly could have. I'm not sure all the fans are aware that Danny Hodge was an Olympic boxer as well as a wrestler. And he did some great shadow boxing with me before the match, just he and me, and he was doing his thing. And I'm basically taking a training lesson from him. And the fans had to be impressed, because I know I was. And I was extremely happy that it wasn't Danny Hodge wearing the gloves across from me, and it was Ron Wright. I was looking forward to trying some of that stuff on Ron Wright, and I get the opportunity to do that. In fact, I'll just go on, this match. I want to kind of describe what went on this match because it kind of leads into next week's match. So we went about five or more rounds, and Ron Wright doing everything but boxing. And, you know, that's because Ron didn't have a big boxing background, nor did I, but at least I was trying to box. Ron was just, he was enjoying some of the things he was doing. The fans were really loving it. They loved it when he got me in the corner, as an example, and he would tie me up, and his brother would be in the opposite side of the ring and jump up on the apron and draw the referee. And when the referee turned his back, Wright would rake the laces of his gloves across my eyes. And then he'd start nailing me with elbows to the head while the referee had his back turned. And I'd go down, you know, heck, he would ring my bell, but he's not doing it with boxing. He's doing it with with elbows. And when I went down, the referee turned around, and he'd start counting, and Wright would bounce around as if he was a real boxer, like he was shadow boxing, and yeah, I knocked him down, I'm going to knock him out. And all in all, it probably wasn't a very bad boxing match, and the finish was really good. The finish really got over. I'd pinned him in the finish of the match in his corner. And I was pummeling him, man, with shots. And I was really nailing him with some, too. And, you know, I'm known for being a little bit stiff. And, gosh, I was probably extremely stiff as a boxer. So I'm hitting with these shots, and he's staggering, about to go down. And then he suddenly drops down on his knees, and he hits me with a low blow below the waist when the referee's behind me and can't see it. So I go down face first in this corner. And before the referee can start to count, Danny jumps up on the apron in my corner, and he starts coming almost into the ring. He's screaming at the referee about the low blow, and he starts through the ropes. Well, the referee's forced to leave me down and go to Danny. And when he goes over to Danny, he's bending, and Danny's bending to come into the ring. The referee's trying to hold him to keep him from coming in the ring. And while he's over there, Wright jerks me up in a full Nelson, and his brother just takes the bucket of water, pours it into the floor, jumps up on the apron, and slams it into the top of my head, and down I go. And then his brother jumps back down like nothing's happened, and Wright falls down on his face in the corner and lays down like he's been hit, too. So when the ref turns around and from trying to stop Danny Hodge from getting in the ring, He sees us both laying there. So he starts to count, and obviously Wright's not hurt. So he acts like he is, and he slowly gets to his feet. And I'm just barely on my hands and knees, and the ref counts me out. And the referee raises Ron Wright's hand, and the crowd goes berserk. Obviously, they had loved every bit of this boxing match. Ron Wright had done everything but box. He ends up winning it with having his brother hit me in the head with the bucket that's used to keep to wet us down. It turns out to be quite an affair.
So how do you move forward from that? That seems like a big moment in a program. All of a sudden you escalate to the point where you have the boxing match. How do you move forward?
Well, this is a really different one. And that's why I'm kind of thrilled about this particular episode. Before we get to the TV show, the morning after the boxing match, I kind of want to give fans what's going to happen on the next card, because it ties in to what's happened on this boxing match. And the next card is on Friday night, March 14th, 1975. And I wanted to talk about the results of that card on the next episode, because I can't get everything I want to get in today. There's a lot happening in this program. I'm going to leave out the top two matches from the next week's card, and everyone's going to understand why I don't want to talk about these as this studcast continues on. Okay, so we'll talk about the opening match for that Friday, the March 14th, 1975. And it was Jerry Bryan against Charlie Fulton. The second match, and I want to go pretty quickly through these. I'm just kind of laying the foundation for the fans to get a feel for what's happening here in this two-week period of time. Second match is Australian Johnny Gray's back again. He's going to wrestle against Rocky Smith, the club-footed Inferno. Heck of a match. Third match, Dale Lewis against 400-pound man Mountain Blackwell, who is a story in himself for Southeastern wrestling. And it's going to become a real challenge for Dale Lewis. He's finally going to get a real challenge from a professional. Jimmy Golden and Les Thatcher are going to wrestle for the Tennessee Tag Championship against Dutch Mantel and John Foley. And the last two matches on the card I'm going to reveal later. So while we're talking about these future cards, I want to do just bear in mind that 2 weeks later, from the time frame we're talking, we're going to be wrestling on a Sunday afternoon in the second Coliseum event. And we've already told a couple of matches that are happening during that time frame. We're going to undoubtedly bring the biggest card to Knoxville that Knoxville has ever had. And I've already disclosed that superstar Bobo Brazil is going to be wrestling for Crazy Luke Graham's Mid-American Heavyweight Championship. That will be a championship match on that card. They will see two guys that they don't see much of. They have seen Crazy Luke one time, but I don't think Knoxville fans had ever seen Bobo Brazil. And I brought him in on purpose because he's a friend of mine and just because this is a big Coliseum show and I want fans to get to see great stars from all over the country and all over the world. So from the Mid-Atlantic territory, I've already talked about a second match that's the very young and upcoming star. His name happens to be Ric Flair. And he's going to face the power lifter, Ken Patera. Another great match. Dale Lewis is going to wrestle against the great Rocket Monroe. Sputnik, everybody knows Sputnik. Rocket and he were one of the greatest tag teams of the 60s and 70s. And Dale, after that match, is going to take on a record 5 challengers in one night at that Coliseum crowd. That's the most he will ever wrestle in one night. And I think he does that just for me, basically, because he realizes got a lot of people and he wants everybody to be able to see what wrestling is all about. And now the fan favorites, Nelson Royal on this card. This is another match that's been added. I'm going to add this one now, is Nelson Royal and Les Thatcher are going to get the Tennessee Tag Championship match against the champions, Dutch Mantel and John Foley. So I've announced 4 matches for this big March 23rd Coliseum Sunday afternoon show. And I've got 4 more to announce next week, and we'll be getting to those next week. So the fans, I noticed, though, are already buzzing about this Coliseum show. It's not like the first time we went there. First time was kind of quiet, and they didn't, I don't know if I want to go. It's in the Coliseum. I really like it in Show Alley Park. I'm not hearing that. I'm hearing, wow, Bobo Brazil, wow. I've heard of Ric Flair. There's an overlap between my television and North Carolina's television. So there's a lot of fans that know who Ric Flair is. He's a young guy over there, but they're pushing him big time already. And also, Patera is a fantastic wrestler as well. So they're looking forward to these great matches that I'm trying to put together for them.
So, Ron, let's get back to what you did next after that show with the boxing match. Obviously, this is the next week's card, but for instance, what did you do next on TV?
Okay, so I really want to highlight this next TV day here, and it's a very unusual angle. What I have done is I've had something happen that has produced for me and an angle that I come up with. I think I'm probably maybe the only one that's ever done something like this that really turns out to captivate the audience, and so. There's a very unusual angle going to take place on this TV, and it's with an unknown wrestler being booked in a championship match with me. So there's not much more than just this is going behind, and there is much more on this television program than just the match with me for wrestling an unknown as the main event. There's a lot going on behind the scenes between me and my television commentator. And I've already mentioned it on several occasions. I'm not at all happy with my show's commentator, Big Jim Hess. And he's a guy that I inherited from the former owner, John Kazana. When you buy territory like I did, you can't just change things automatically. You want to do things in a manner in which you keep your audience and you find someone better to fill some slots than what that former program had. And I'm kind of behind the eight ball here. I don't know very many local guys. So after many years, you know, I'm having a problem with Jim Hess anyway, and he's been winging these programs every Saturday after many years. Before I arrived, there's no structure or even a format for each one of these television shows. So Big Jim Hess has become the focal point over the years of the entire television show, no matter who the wrestlers are or what the card is. And he had grown accustomed to running the show. Basically, that's about a good way of putting it, I think. He was kind of running the show. So that was not at all what I wanted. And it certainly wasn't what I needed to move my company forward. There was a constant conflict with him over how I saw his responsibility and how he viewed his responsibility. When I showed him the format, this is one of the first times I ever showed him a format of the show. And that day, I go to him before the show, and I show him the first structured format for their new Southeastern Wrestling program. And he obviously wasn't impressed. He instantly began questioning my need to change their old show, as he referred to it. And God knows I really had a need for it. I mean, he might not have understood it, but I wanted to change everything about the old show. I was as polite as I could possibly be in explaining my thoughts, but it was obvious he was in total disagreement with me. And I was just as obviously tied to this renegade commentator because I'd just taken over. And like I said before, I really didn't know anybody else in the area that could make and become a commentator at this point for me. And so on this particular day, on this particular show, this is the beginning of the end for Big Jim Hess. What happens in this show is going to be, it's going to change everything for Knoxville wrestling. It's going to make Southeastern the biggest thing that ever came to Knoxville and wrestling. And it starts with this commentator. It's an odd situation, but it's really that important a situation. So in this particular show this day, the format that I'm going to show Big Jim is going to give him, it's going to give him an opportunity to criticize my company. I didn't figure that was going to happen. I wanted to do it in a different way. But bear in mind that when he criticizes my company, he's criticizing me. And the fans don't know that. They don't know that I own the company. But I just really, really get upset with what happens between him and I during this program.
So what happened that day in the studio, Ron? I mean, it sounds like everything's coming to a head with you and Big Jim Hess.
Well, you know, Big Jim and I usually spent up until this point to where I had a format just talking about several minutes, talking about what's on the show and what I want to accomplish during the show. That's what television programs are for. That is your advertising, your major advertising tool, and it has to sell for you. It has to put people in line to buy tickets, or you're not accomplishing anything with the wrestling program. So it's a process that I witnessed of many, many times with Eddie Graham and his booker and the consummate professional, Gordon Solie, before recording television shows every Wednesday in Florida for years. I watched them do it. They allowed me to sit in on the process of discussing this program today and what we're going to do and why we're going to do it and what I expect from it. So, this is the procedure I'm going through for the first time with Big Jim Hess. Here's the format today. Here's what I want to do. It was not only business, but it was extremely important business that was being discussed. Lots of people's lives were dependent upon this wrestling program every week. All of your wrestlers and your office people and everybody connected with your company. These programs have to produce people, and people produce money, and that produces a paycheck for them. So everyone, and I do mean everyone, was on board, or you were thrown off are thrown overboard by the captain of the ship, Eddie Graham. And Florida, you did not, you listened, you paid attention, and you did exactly what Eddie wanted done, or he's the captain of the ship, and you're going to find yourself swimming, man. So it was the way it needed to be, and it's the way it had to be. So on my ship, Southeastern Wrestling, let's call this Southeastern Wrestling, my ship, because I'm kind of the captain here, that was not the case. There was a conflict over who was actually running the ship every Saturday. And Gordon Soley steered a perfect course for Eddie Graham. But my pilot was a rogue pirate, and he only wanted to be a star, and he wanted to steer a course to fun and games. He was having a good time out there, and this is my playtime, and I'm going to have a good time. This business was not about fun and games to me. This was serious stuff, and especially when it came to my television show, and that television show had to feed us all. So this day's format was set up to question the thought process. My whole concept for this program was I want to set up the thought process of the owners of a new company, Southeastern Wrestling. Fans don't know who Southeastern Wrestling is run by, nor should they. I wanted them to understand why this angle that I'm going to work is even there. I'm expecting that Big Jim Hess is going to help me do that. So that was how it was supposed to go. That was exactly what he was supposed to do for me. I sat down, spent a few minutes with Ron Wright, showed him the format, talked to him about the same thing. He understood the thought process and the beauty of the angle instantly. Big Jim Hess decided to be the star. Instead of accepting what I wanted to do, he wants to go his own direction during the course of this show. And he wants to steer the ship in the course that he wants to go. So by the end of the show, I'm a very upset guy when I finally make my appearance on the set at the end of that show with Big Jim. And that's why when we get to that part of the show, fans are going to see kind of how I took over the ship. So we opened that show on the Saturday after the boxing match with Ron Wright sitting at the desk with Big Jim Hess. And Wright is smiling like a Cheshire cat. And he says to Big Jim, he says, and, you know, I hope fans don't mind this. And I certainly don't do it as an insult to Ron Wright. I like to imitate Ron Wright's voice because I think he was such a tremendous character and such a tremendous interviewer you don't really get the grasp of what Ron Wright is all about unless you get that accent. And so they're starting, we'll start the program, and the two of them are sitting at the desk. Ron Wright's all smiles, and he turns to Jim Hess off the bat, and he goes, Big Jim, now I shouldn't have never had that boxing match with that idiot Ron Fuller. When he got that Southern title back from me two Fridays ago, I should have automatically got a return match for the belt. But instead, I got a boxing match. I don't know about these Southeastern promoters, and how they doing things, but I sure know I'm entitled to another shot at that belt now, and I'm going to prove it right here. I want to start today's show with the end of the big boxing match last night in Chilhowee Park and roll that film. So he gets right into the meat of the matter here. He's going to show how he won the match, and he should have got the return match. And the film's been highly edited. Obviously, it doesn't start till the very end. It doesn't show the thing he did to win the match. It doesn't show Donnie hitting me in the head with the metal bucket that causes me to lose. He just picks it up where Donnie's already hit me and both of us are laying on the mat. And Ron's selling like he's been knocked out, but he hasn't been hit at all. So, and it shows the ref at the end of it raising his hand. And the crowd's going berserk in the building. And the crowd that's in the studio is watching this on the monitors, and they're going crazy, too. So the film stops and Wright starts over again, and he looks at Big Jim again and says, well, there you got it, Big Jim. I done knocked him cold, and now I done give him a good old Tennessee dog whooping, and I've won it, and now I'm up for a return match to get my Southern title back. So now it's Big Jim's Hess time to start talking for this particular program. And he looks at him, at Ron Wright, very seriously, and he asks this question right off the bat. He goes, so you don't like the new Southeastern wrestling people, Ron, that have taken over from the great John Kazana? Well, Ron Wright is like dumbfounded. You can see he's not expecting to ask something like that. And he changes the subject. Ron's a consummate professional too, you know, and he goes, Big Jim, I just want to know about my title shot. And he goes, so Big Jim is forced to get back on course here again, you know, so he goes, you know, so you haven't seen the card, Ron. You haven't seen the card yet. And Ron says, well, no, Big Jim, I just got here. I mean, everyone just seen me beat him in the middle of the ring, and without a doubt, I deserve a return match for my Southern title. Well, Big Jim says, well, I'm sorry, Ron, but he's defending the Southern title against the Mexican champion. I intentionally said it's going to be the Cuban champion, but he was against the Mexican champion, Al Velasco, next Friday night. Ron Wright goes crazy on the set. And his first question is, who in the world is Al Velasco? And Big Jim says, I guess that proves. Now, he's going off course here again. Big Jim says something like, I guess this proves, and you and I was right, Ron, that there's something funny about this new Southeastern wrestling. Well, right then he throws Ron Wright under the bus with him, you know, as far as I'm concerned. The point here is, for my entire program, is I want the fans to be saying, who is Al Velasco and why is he in the main event when Ron Wright deserves the title shot at Ron Fuller?
Well, Ron, who is Al Velasco? And also that Big Jim Hess response. What are you thinking? I mean, did he really do that? He went on the air and just basically buried you in Southeastern wrestling?
Yeah. I gave him the opportunity. You know, I want them to question, you know, why I get this title shot, but I don't want them to question why Southeastern Wrestling is not a good organization and why they don't know what they're doing. And that's where Jim Hess wants to take this, and Ron Wright's wanting to take this. Well, who is Al Velasco? I mean, why would he get this championship match and this opportunity? So we're headed in two different directions here. Ron Wright's on course, and Big Jim Hess is trying to bury Southeastern Wrestling. By burying Southeastern Wrestling, he's going to try to bury me. So that's what's going on. That's it's like a mutiny on board my ship at this point. And I'm sitting in the control room, and I have no way to stop it because Jim Hess is not going to come off that set until the end of the program. I have no opportunity to change his course. So this program is going to go a little bit in the wrong direction. So, yeah, you basically heard that correctly, you know. I mean, his response is just ridiculous. And so you heard it correctly. But your second question is probably the one that everybody is asking as well, because Al Velasco is not a big name. It's also the best angle I may have come up with since Ron Wright kissed my secretary 5 weeks earlier that began a string of big houses. So I'm going to explain it all, but in due time today. Obviously, I had gotten everyone's attention with the announcement of next week's main event. No one until now knew the backstory going on between me and Big Jim until this show today. This is all happening to a young guy who's 26 years old, has invested his everything in this company, and he's now got a guy that's running his television show that obviously doesn't care about the future of my company or care about me. So ridiculous stuff in a way, right?
I'll tell you. And we will return in just one moment to find out if Big Jim Hess approves of where Ron is going next with this story. It's not every day that you have to get your commentator's approval before you do anything on TV. But first, a word about Super Studcast number 16, parts 1 and 2 with Les Thatcher.
Super Studcast number 16 with Les Thatcher, former star of Southeastern Wrestling, that becomes its television commentator and developer of the best studio wrestling show in history, is now available in its entirety. Get more than 3 hours of classic wrestling at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast now. This extremely popular Super Studcast is everything you could want to know about the formation of Southeastern Wrestling, how it became the best small territory in all of wrestling, and the ideas and thoughts behind its tremendous television production that made the TV show the most awarded in history. This Super Studcast is a rare one that follows the same time frame as where we are now in the regular Studcast. It encourages regular Studcast fans to jump into the future and find out what these Super Studcasts are all about. Become a patron and supporter of all Studcasts now at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast. Only $2.99 for 3+ hours of fantastic wrestling history.
There you hear it, Super Studcast number 16 with Les Thatcher, parts 1 and 2 available right now at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast. $2.99 gets you in the door. Thank you so much to all the patrons, especially all the new patrons worldwide. I have to say that I know, Ron, you felt the same way. Surprised to see the worldwide impact that some of these Super Studcasts are making, and the one with Les Thatcher has been, just like the rest of them, very, very popular.
Very, very popular. Patrons around the world, I just want to thank them all very, very much. Wow. And they've just been really, really jumping on board. And going back and listening to old issues, other programs on other stars that we have done, and it's just amazing what's happening to us, and how the Studcast are everywhere I go. Fans now don't don't want to talk about my wrestling anymore. They want to talk about the Studcast. So we're doing something right here. That's for darn sure. So let me continue on with this one, because this is, as you pretty much said a second ago, I'm dealing with a potential catastrophe here, especially for the future. Yeah. So as this show continues, and as I wanted it to appear, it just gets worse for Ron Wright, because he finds out that he's not only not going to face me for the championship, but he's going to wrestle Danny Hodge next Friday night. And I'm going to be defending the title against Al Velasco. Before the show started, in an earlier conversation, I'd given Wright most of the entire show. I said, Ron, I'm going to send you back out there. Feel free to go back 2 or 3 or 4 times and hammer this. Who is Al Velasco? The problem is here is when he goes back out there, Big Jim is going to want to hammer about what a horrible organization Southeastern Wrestling is. And that is definitely not what I want to have happen in the program. So Wright's out there back and forth many, many times. And he's getting basically right to the point. You know, hey, Big Jim, who is this? Al Velasco. You know, He's perfect with his limited responses about Southeastern. I don't make the show about Southeastern. Southeastern's not going to draw any money in the house. I want to make the show about how Ron Wright is getting a screw job here from Southeastern. So Southeastern promoters have kept his focus on Al Velasco. Ron Wright's doing a heck of a job. But Big Jim takes every shot he can to down the new company. And how it's not fan-friendly or knowledgeable, or these guys aren't knowledgeable about the sport of wrestling even, you know. I mean, he says some things that are just absolutely horrible. So I didn't sit in the audience with my secretary on this show, as I'd always done. I'm not seen at all, intentionally, until I come out at the very end of the show with my Southern belt, and I join Big Jim at the set. And I'm very upset when I get there. I'm trying not to knock him out, basically. But when I sit down, he jumps on his subject of the day, not the subject he's supposed to. He jumps back on his subject of the day. And the first thing he says to me is, just exactly what is your connection with Southeastern Wrestling? And I was like, hey, and knowing he knows that I don't want fans to be aware that I own the company, how could he ask me that, right? And so I looked directly at him, and with fire in my eyes, I guess, you know, and I say, you know, before I begin to talk about my illustrious opponent, I'm going to focus on Al Velasco. Before I talk about my illustrious opponent, I want you to address me by my new name. Big Jim gets my anger, I'm pretty sure, right then, and where I'm coming from. He drops his head, and he when he looks up again, his face is red. And I say again to him, what is my new name? He hesitates and then says, Ron Fuller, that's your name. And I tell him, no, that is not my name, and I will not talk to you until you address me properly, and only then will I tell you who Al Velasco is. So he squirms in his chair. He's red in the face. He's upset. He's mad too. You know that I'm calling him out here, basically, in a way. And he finally blurts out, "You are the Tennessee Stud." And I said, it's about time, you lowly announcer. And now I will tell you, Ron Wright and all these ignorant hillbillies out there, exactly who Al Velasco is. And then I say, you know, Al Velasco. And I'm actually, I have been turned on to this guy by Hiro Matsuda. And it's not Al. It is Al Velasco I'm going to wrestle. But he has a very famous brother. And I'm thinking that Diablo Velasco is who I'm going to be actually maybe in the ring with. So I'm a little confused as everybody in the crowd about who is this Al Velasco. It's working perfectly because it's even going to a point beyond my knowledge of Al Velasco. But I say to him, Al Velasco is one of the most famous wrestlers ever from the great country of Cuba. It's an honor to defend my precious title against such a well-known star. He is the present Cuban champion, and I can't wait to wrestle him because even though he is Cuban, he smells a whole lot better than Ron Wright. I get up and I start to leave the set, and I'm going to be very short about it because I think I'm having a hard time controlling my temper here with Big Jim. And when I start to leave, Big Jim goes into tirade while I'm walking away from the set, and he says, "You know, this ain't fair. John Cazana would have given him that title shot, and why is it that the Southeastern Wrestling won't? You know." So I stop and I come back to interrupt him, and I say, "I will not wrestle Ron Wright again until he has been defumigated and properly bathed." And then I look at him and I say, "And you stink too, along with all these freeloading fans in this studio. And y'all all need to take that bath with Ron Wright." And then I leave the set with my belt and I walk away. Ron Wright comes back pretty darn quickly. Show is almost over. There's very little time left. He goes, and just before the show goes, he goes to the desk and he goes, "You know, I don't like being cheated, Big Jim, out of something I deserve. And I want all you fans in the studio and all them people at home watching know that Ron Wright is not going to allow this to happen in the great city of Knoxville. And you can bet your best coon dog something bad's going to happen Friday night." Big Jim delivers the worst ending to a wrestling show in history. He does not even have a hint of a smile, and he basically says, "That's the end of our show today." He gets up from his seat, and I'm standing off camera. He can see me, and he goes out the front door of the studio. He never comes back to where I can say anything to him or do anything about what's just happened here. So, now, I really didn't want to make this episode about Big Jim. I really am talking. I wanted to talk more today about Because Big Jim, I'm gonna talk about Big Jim and the future of television and television wrestling in Knoxville, because he's a critical part of what's going to happen in the near future that's going to change everything in Knoxville. It's going to make Knoxville a huge territory, and it's kind of because of this problem I'm having with my commentator. I'm going to end up changing televisions and everything else. But my focus today on this program, when I went in there, is I want people saying, who is Al Velasco? Why is Al Velasco wrestling for the championship? Well, this angle set the foundation for the main event on the Coliseum show in 2 weeks. And I said I would talk later about a couple more matches. The main event is going to be actually me and Ron Wright wrestling for the Southern Heavyweight Championship after this Al Velasco deal. We're going to actually be wrestling in that main event on that Coliseum show for the championship in a Texas death match. It's pretty well assured a continuation, a string of big houses for me at Chilhowie. I think the way Ron Wright finishes the program is, you better come on down there, because something's going to happen that ain't scheduled to happen. Basically, he's telling them, I'm going to get me a piece of Ron Fuller, even though I'm not booked with him. So the program began six weeks earlier with the angle of Ron Wright kissing my secretary, and now we're going to sell out again with me wrestling an unknown, a totally unknown guy in the main event. Truly a phenomenal little deal.
Okay, Ron, so you've talked about it several times now. Who is Al Velasco?
Well, Al Velasco was introduced to me by Hiro Matsuda, and Hiro worked for me 6 weeks earlier. And on that card, he got me off to the side. He said, this guy is a friend of mine, and he's going to be in the area. And can you use him on the card on this night that I have booked him in the main event? I don't know anything about him. I had never seen him wrestle. I didn't know whether he was good or bad or anything else. But I put him in my main event because it just fit perfectly with screwing Ron Wright out of that main event shot. And that was the angle that developed from Hiro Matsuda suggesting me asking me basically if I could put him on the card. So I have put this Al Velasco on my card, and he's not a great worker, but it's not the match that's important here. It's the fact that Ron Wright did not get the match. That's the entire angle. I thought it was a brilliant little idea. We go in there, we sell out with me wrestling a guy from Cuba that is not well known.
And here is how it read in the newspaper, Ron. Two titles at stake. Ron Fuller will take on Cuban titleist Al Velasco for the Southeastern Heavyweight Wrestling Championship Friday night at Chilhowie Park Arena. In another championship battle, Dutch Mantel and John Foley will go against Jimmy Golden and Les Thatcher for the Tennessee Tag Team belt. A $1,000 challenge match will pit Professor Dale Lewis against 400-pound Man Mountain Blackwell. Three other bouts will be on the card, including a grudge match between Ron Wright and Danny Hodge. Australian Johnny Gray is to face Rocky Smith, and Jerry Bryant will face Charlie Fulton. Action begins at 8:30. Ron, one other thing before we wrap things up, because I know we are tight on time. You mentioned that the big show you're doing is Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Just for the listeners who haven't been following along, what is the normal schedule that you run Knoxville, and typically, was Sunday afternoon a good time to run a wrestling show?
Well, we don't know at this point. Typically, it's a Friday night town, every Friday night. It happened to be that Chilhowie Park is booked for a very rare Friday night that I could not get. And when I find that out, I tried to go to the Coliseum. I wanted to go on Friday night in the Coliseum because that continues that the sequences of Friday night matches, and people are used to coming on Friday. They don't have a Friday night available, but they have a Sunday available. Well, I don't want to run on Sunday night, but because it's in the winter there, I feel like that maybe in the afternoon, if I ran, I want to find out how it will draw on a Sunday afternoon, because in the future, once I get bigger and I start running the Coliseum, I'm not going to, in the wintertime, run on Friday nights. I'm going to run on Sunday afternoons. and I find out what happens with this Coliseum show the first time I ever try a Sunday afternoon, it's going to convince me that that is the day to run and that is the time to run at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a big change from Friday night at 8:30, but it works out, and we end up drawing a pretty darn decent crowd, biggest one yet in the Coliseum. We're still continuing that very, very important growth in the company of Southeastern Wrestling.
And we will get to that show in the next few weeks here on the Studcast. But as we begin to wrap things up, we want to remind you, you can become friends with the Tennessee Stud on Facebook. The page, Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. All you got to do is like that page and boom, you're friends with a wrestling legend. Of course, you can follow Ron on Instagram and Twitter at Ron Fuller Welch. You can follow me on Twitter at Great Brian Last, and you can hear me on the 605 Super Podcast at 605pod.com or available wherever it is that you find your very favorite podcasts for classic wrestling talk and wrestling humor, the 605 Super Podcast. We talked about it earlier. Super Studcast number 16 with Les Thatcher has broken all sorts of records, and it is a great history lesson about the beginning of Southeastern Wrestling as well as the entire journey Ron and Les had in Knoxville. Listen to parts 1 and 2 right now, over 3 hours, available at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast. Only $2.99 is the entry level to get you in the door. This was such an enjoyable program for me to be a part of. I think you should definitely check it out, especially if you've been enjoying this history lesson for Southeastern Wrestling that we've been doing each and every week right here on the Studcast. Speaking of which, Ron, where are we going next week on the Studcast?
Well, we're going to discuss the results, obviously, of the Who is Al Velasco night. And we're going to dive into the second Coliseum show big time with the entire card and the results of that huge event in which everybody would like to know, you know, what happens when I bring Ric Flair to Knoxville and I bring Bobo Brazil and Kim Patera and a lot of new faces to the eastern side of Tennessee and to Knoxville, and I start putting Southeastern Wrestling on the map.
Ron Fuller's Studcast is a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. For the Tennessee Stud Ron Fuller, I'm the Great Brian Last. The story continues next week.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
1, 2, 3.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.